Welcome to Rooting For You, a seasonal gardening podcast for non-experts. I'm Tess, and I know nothing.
And I'm Elise, and I know some things.
Each week, we'll chat about one gardening topic, and then discuss the effort-reward payoff by asking, is the juice worth the squeeze? Just a heads up, there might be a bit of swearing in this episode. You've been warned. Today we have a very exciting bonus episode because we're absolutely thrilled to be interviewing Kate Flood, or as you're more likely to know her, Compostable Kate. Kate has a pretty massive following on Instagram, and if you're not already following her, you should be immediately. Kate's Instagram page is an absolute treasure trove of tips and tricks for composting. And I'm not sure between Elise and Kate whether it's possible to find a pair that loves composting more. Truth be told, Elise has been fangirling in a big way in the lead up to this recording. In Kate's own words, I'm here to sex up soil science. So bang on your reading glasses, or in our case, bang in your headphones. It's time to get dirty. So Kate, welcome to Rooting For You.
Thank you so much. I love the name of your podcast. It's really invigorating, and yeah, it made me laugh. I was telling my partner that I'm doing this podcast tonight. So what's it called? Rooting For You. Said, what?
We mean it in all of the ways.
All of the possibilities.
It's lovely being here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Do you want to start by telling us a little bit about how and why you first became interested in composting?
Yeah, sure. So I have been really lucky to have always had composting role models in my life. So my mum is an avid composter. She still is. And she always did it from when I was a little girl. So my sister and I grew up in a really small, very urban part of the inner west of Sydney, Glebe. And we had a really, really tiny backyard. But mum still managed to fit in a compost bin, which I must admit, now that I am a compost expert, thinking back to those days, it was definitely really nitrogen heavy, often had a rat or two that had taken up shipping it. But even with those kind of lingering memories of hot summer days and the compost smelling, I always was fascinated by it. I was fascinated by the transformational quality of chucking food waste into a bin and then it turning into something so much bigger than its component parts. Yeah, and look, I think as well, my parents really encouraged my sister and I to play in dirt. So, you know, so many of my fondest childhood memories are me covered in dirt, playing outside, and that stayed with me. And when I moved out of home, I encouraged my probably pretty unwilling housemates to get into composting. But my whole life I've always done it, you know, and it's just been a part of something that I have always enjoyed, but it's always been quite purposeful as well, because it connects you in with something bigger. And it's, yeah, for me, especially now, it's a really empowering thing to be able to do and to then be able to teach my own children.
Mm. It's certainly one of the big themes of your messaging on composting is on climate change. And can you talk a little bit about why climate change is such a motivator for you and how you think that composting fits into the fight against it?
Yeah, sure. So I think we all are pretty aware of the fact that throwing food waste into landfill is an absolute climate disaster. So food waste can be a real resource when we return it to our soil, or it can be a huge liability when we put it into landfill, because what we are doing in landfill is we're putting it in an environment that is deprived of oxygen, and it's also deprived of all of the composting bugs. So instead of your food waste breaking down and those nutrients returning to the soil, what ends up happening is huge amounts of methane are released. And methane is a greenhouse gas that we hear about, but it actually is stronger than carbon dioxide. So your car exhaust, so the CO2 that's coming out of that, methane is 25 times stronger than that. So the food that we put into landfill really is exacerbating climate change significantly. And it's a really frustrating thing, because governments know this. You know, everyone in power knows this. People who are well-educated know this, even people who are maybe not so familiar with all of the climate science. We know that putting food waste in landfill is a really bad thing. But so many of us do it because that's the way that our food waste procedures are structured. And what I want to do with compost is really empower people to take ownership of their own food waste and feel excited about being able to transfer all of those nutrients back into their soil, because it's not rocket science, and it does personally make me feel a hell of a lot better about the way that I can contribute positively to the planet. And it also is really addictive as well, which I know, Elise, you're aware of that. Once you get started, well, you just want to keep on making more and more. Yeah. So, yeah, I think it's for people at this present moment where we're at, you know, we want to be having tangible solutions to climate change. And we know that there is still time to reverse the climate crisis, and managing our food waste responsibly is one of those huge strategies that we all need to be doing.
And to think that the same material can be so positive and enriching to the world if handled in one way and so negative and detrimental if handled in another, I almost can't think of one thing that can go from being an absolute superstar positive to being so detrimental with just the slightest, you know, tinge in how we manage it, whether we're putting it in plastic bags and then, as you say, without the oxygen we're creating methane, or whether we're composting it properly. Like, it's so similar but so drastically different that I think it sounds like, yes, you and I are 100% aligned on this, in that it seems so obvious that why is everyone not doing it? This is definitely not about me, but a little side topic that I had about 10 years ago, I contacted my local council in the Melbourne city and I said, why do we not compost? Like, you manage my recycling, you manage my rubbish, but you don't manage my compost. And I went on a bit of crusade with the council and they said, oh, well, you know, we can't manage it. There's issues with, you know, pests and problems. And they had this whole line of reasons to why they couldn't do it. And I was like, you can manage the toilets, yet you can't manage the compost, you know? Anyway, 10 years later in Port Phillip, they just put in compost bins on the corner of some of the streets. So I was like, we're definitely moving in the right direction. But to us of us that kind of see the light, it just seems so obvious that it's frustrating.
I know, and I think it's a really good point that when you think about all of the outputs that we have from our everyday life, you know, we've got every moment in our life we produce waste. And recycling feels like it's the answer, but unfortunately it really isn't, and it itself requires a huge amount of energy, whereas compost doesn't require anything, especially when we're doing it at home. Large-scale commercial facilities, when they're operated through the council, so there's a system here where I live on the south coast of New South Wales in Bega, we've got FOGO bins, so we can put our food waste into our green waste bin and then FOGO will collect it and compost it, which is wonderful, but it still doesn't solve the problem, because the trucks that come and collect the food waste are diesel trucks, and then the large scale compost machinery are powered with petrol, and, you know, that still is quite a wasteful way of managing your waste. Whereas if you have a little dinky worm farm in the back corner of your yard, or a really simple open pile, or a bokashi bin, you yourself can manage it without any energy inputs. So you're just returning all of those nutrients to the soil without any additional waste being created. And, you know, it does seem so obvious. It's the most obvious solution. And I think it's, for me, I've been really excited to be able to be in a position to educate people about compost, because I think, you know, I think we're at an interesting moment where people are really concerned about the future of the planet, but people are also starting to be excited and empowered about their own little individual patches and their small gardens. And I think that really came about with COVID. You know, people started realizing, oh, I've got this little balcony space, how can I green it up? Or I've got this tiny little patch of earth, what can I do to make it my own beautiful garden space? And so I think it's an interesting point where people who have never been gardeners before have suddenly started being really interested in the soil. And as soon as you start growing plants, you start thinking about the soil and you start thinking about ways to improve it. And compost is a perfect fit in that piece of that puzzle.
It's the first two interviews that we've had so far were the Cheeky Gardener and the Hungry Gardener. And the number one tip that they had for gardeners growing out was about soil quality and how important it is. And the flow on it, you know, we were talking about how it is great that in your local council, in my local council too, that they're doing the food, the green waste, food waste recycling now, composting now, which is fabulous. But if you give it away to the council, you can't keep it for yourself. And like, there are so many fabulous benefits from the output of compost and putting it into your ground and back into your soil and then improving if you're creating edibles, like that's fabulous. And so it is just a win-win-win to be able to do this for yourself and saves money too.
There aren't that many topics that, you know, you're helping the environment, you're helping yourself and you're saving money. I mean, like, it's, again, all I can come back to is it's just a no-brainer.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. And I'm totally a greedy composter. You know, I want to get as much input from my local community as possible. And that was an interesting thing for me, actually, moving from Sydney, where I, for many, many years, was a Share Waste host. So Share Waste, if people don't know it, it's a free global app and it connects people that have compost bins with compost donors, so people that don't have compost bins but have food waste to give away. And in Sydney, I would compost hundreds of litres of food waste every week from our local cafes and through the Share Waste app. But coming to Bega, and Bega is a much more rural area, so a lot of people do have their own compost bins, but people that don't then give their food waste away to FOGO. And I was sort of feeling really scrap hungry and thinking, it was a funny experience just not finding food waste. Now I've actually connected in with a few cafes, and they, instead of putting all of their food waste into the FOGO bin, they save stuff for me, which is really great. But you do end up seeing, you know, we call it waste, but you end up seeing food scraps as a resource, and you realize how significant they are for growing beautiful soil. Because an interesting thing when you think about soil health, it's actually the biology in the soil is much more significant to plant health than the nutrients in the soil. So if you can nail having soil that's alive and vibrant with huge amounts of organic matter and all of the beneficial bacteria and fungi and microorganisms that come with the compost, then you'll end up growing beautiful plants. So, you know, I think it's worthwhile being selfish with your food waste and turning it to your own little patch as opposed to giving it to someone else.
For city folk and for people who might only have a small space or a balcony space, what can you say? I mean, I think there is a little bit of a stigma perhaps that compost is smelly or that it's dirty, or like, what? How can we encourage people who live in small spaces, small garden spaces, to really get involved with this?
Yes, that often is a big psychological stumbling point for people to get behind compost, because they do think it's going to stink, it's going to attract rodents, you'll get all of the neighborhood cockroaches flooding to your backyard. And when managed correctly, that just doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. So I'll go through a couple of different scenarios. So the first is carbon. So that's always a big part of educating people. So if you fill up your compost bin with food waste alone, that's nitrogen, and you will end up getting really stinky, pest attracting slime in your backyard. It's not going to turn into beautiful, friable, humus rich compost. What you need to add is carbon. So that's the brown, dry, dead stuff. So things like brown fallen leaves. You can use human manufactured carbon as well. So cardboard and newspaper. All of these components provide a balance for all of those juicy greens. And so that's always the number one thing when I have people on Instagram saying, my compost stinks. And I said, what have you added into it? Oh, all of our food waste. If you add at least 50%, at least, the perfect ratio, in my opinion, and composting is not an exact science, is about 60% brown stuff to 40% green stuff. if you can nail that seat, the cord to sand ratio, then your compost truly won't stink. But also for people that live in urban areas or for people that live in apartments and don't have access to soil at all, composting is a bit more challenging, but it is totally doable. So there's a couple of flexible systems, one that I'm totally obsessed with. It's called Bokashi composting. It's quite a different form of decomposition. It's not aerobic, so it's anaerobic, which means you are fermenting your food waste without the presence of oxygen. And the way that it works is you have a compost inoculant and you sprinkle it on top. So it's called EM, which stands for effective microorganisms, and they're really magical things. You sprinkle it on top and your food waste ferments down, and then you can they're quite small enclosed bins, so they're good for apartment dwellers, and they don't smell. You may not believe me, but they truly don't when you make sure you press down all of the air and drain them regularly. And then you can add those into a community compost bin, or you could find a share waste host, or you could process it in your own home in a soil factory. So there's lots of different flexible ways that you can manage food waste. It's really finding the right sort of setup for you. And it can be pretty intimidating because there are so many different options on the market.
And I suppose for beginners in this whole discussion, we keep saying food waste, but actually, as you just touched on then, it's so much more than just food waste that we're processing in a compost bin. Because obviously all the carbon elements, they're not food waste. You know, that's your newspaper or your toilet roll holders or your autumn leaves, you know, your delivery packages, that kind of thing. So when we look at all the different things that we can actually process in this system, it's even bigger than than just food waste for, you know, for someone that hasn't done composting before. When you start thinking about how many waste products you make, eggshells, that kind of thing, that can actually go in a compost bin, it blows out to be a massive amount of the waste you're creating each week, I suppose. Yeah, so I don't want anyone who's new to composting to think it's only food scraps here. It's each and everything.
Yeah, you need to change that thinking, because if you are just thinking about compost as the way to dispose of food waste, you're not going to produce great compost. So I talk about people putting on their compost-coloured glasses and seeing the world in greens and browns. So you need to have the balance of both. And, you know, mine are really trendy cat-eye glasses. But it does, you know, once you start thinking, you need to have that balance. So, you know, instead of recycling something, return it to your soil. People often ask, what's better for the planet, recycling or composting? And without a doubt, it's composting. The carbon may not be turned into another, you know, if it's newspaper, it may not be turned into paper again. But the reality of recycling is so much of what we send off to be recycled ends up in landfill. And some of the products that do end up getting recycled, there's a lot of energy outputs that are needed to transform what they are into something new. And composting is a transformational process, but it doesn't involve any additional energy. So we are pulling out stuff that may have been sent to a recycling plant, your food waste that may have been sent to landfill, and we're combining the two. And we're returning all of those nutrients to the soil, because if they, you know, it's food waste. If we're sending food waste to landfill, those nutrients are lost. And, you know, there's a climate crisis, but there's also a soil crisis at the moment. So we're looking at fertile, active soil being extinct within about 60 years, which is, that's in our lifetime. You know, it's shocking to think about, especially when we are all swimming in scraps that we can return to our soil. We can all be making soil, and, you know, you can do it in any setting. And it is something to instead of feeling distressed, it's something to feel excited about, because what we do in our own homes with our food waste truly matters, and we can really be making a big difference.
Yeah, that's just so beautifully said. Like, we really can make a change every day, and we're making waste all the time. As you said, every moment we go through life, we're creating waste, and we have total control over what we do with that. And, you know, once you start with this, like, it's really not a big ask. it's totally doable for people.
Yes. And look, I think that, so to break it down simply for people who are on the edge but thinking, oh, this feels too hard, thinking about compost as a recipe is a really good way to think about it. So for the compost recipe to work, we need to have four inputs. So that is greens, or our nitrogen, so our food waste and our green garden matter, so our grass clippings and our indoor plant prunings and all of our juicy scraps. Then we need to balance those with carbon. So that's the dead, dry, brown stuff. And it can be, as we've mentioned before, natural sources like brown fallen leaves or hay and straw, or manufactured sources like cardboard and newspaper, paper towels, tissues. And then we also need to have water and oxygen, because what we are providing, so in our compost bins, it's a controlled environment, but we need to be providing those four inputs for compost microbes. So people often think that all of the food waste that's happening in their bins is down to worms, and worms are part of the process, but actually the biggest, most important part of the decomposition that happens in our compost bins is due to microbes. And once you start thinking about that, we need to give them a balanced diet. So all life on earth needs water, air, and a source of energy. And that's the same with the microbes in our bin. And once we provide those four universal composting inputs, you really, it simplifies things, because you know that you're going to be nailing the conditions to have really active, beautiful compost being formed by those microbes.
And if you've got smell, then obviously you're not nailing your recipe.
Yeah, well, that's right. So you can respond to that, you know. And as I said, like, compost is not an exact science. And I think that's where people get tripped up. You know, my partner, for instance, he's not a very confident cook. And if I said, I'll just whip up anything, and he's like, but where's the recipe? You know, he can't operate without having something really tangible in front of him, written down step by step. So my compost recipe is always adding in more browns than greens. So if you have a little bucket that you keep on your kitchen bench that you fill up with your kitchen scraps, also add into those carbon that you're creating. So if you're using paper towel in the kitchen, chuck that in as well. So filling up that bucket with greens and browns, then when you empty it into your compost bin, presumably there probably is more food waste in that bucket, so always add in some more carbon as well. So we need to be adding carbon throughout the whole process. And then when you look at the organic matter, what does it look like? Is it dry? Is it too wet? So using that direct feedback, so, you know, we, instead of having that recipe, you need to be using your senses, looking at things, smelling them, even feeling them. So putting your hand into a compost bin and grabbing a handful of it and giving it a squeeze. If the organic matter is too dry, no water will come out. If it's too wet, lots of water will be squeezed out. And ideally, you want your compost to feel like a wrung out sponge. So all of the organic matter should be moist, but when you grab a handful, only one or two drops of water should be able to be squeezed out. And that is a really clear and easy test for people to be checking. Yeah, and then in terms of oxygen, you know, that doesn't feel like something you can add in, because, you know, we can't grab handfuls of air and chuck it in. But you actually can add and oxygen in a number of ways, and that can be through the way that you build and layer your pile, so adding chunky carbon like wood chips and sticks, because they create pockets of oxygen within all of the juicy green waste, or manually turning your pile. So I'm always posting on Instagram about using my compost aerator, because it's I think for me it's like a moment of my self-care. Going and turning a compost bin. And that, what that does, it looks like a giant corkscrew, and you twist it down through all of the green and brown layers in your compost to draw it back up. And that mixes those, all of the food waste and the carbon, but it also allows air to penetrate all of the organic matter. So if you can think about all of those factors, the more you do it, the more it will just become second nature to you. And, you know, you always are getting that direct feedback from your compost pile. If it's stinky, add more carbon. If it's slow to decompose, add more food waste. If it's a blisteringly hot summer's day and all of your plants are looking sad and dry, your compost probably is as well. So add more water. You know, it kind of ends up being common sense. Once you do it enough, you really do master it, because it's not hard, and you're getting that feedback from your compost pile the whole time.
So cutting in here, as suspected, Elise and Kate can just bang on about composting until the cows come home. So we've broken this episode up into two, and we will do a second part of what you shortly in a couple of weeks. But absolutely stay tuned for that, because it is going to be the conversation was fabulous, and I think you're really going to enjoy it. Rooting For You is hosted by Elise and Tess, artwork by Lauren Janine. You can find us on Instagram at Rooting For You Pod, or email rootingforyou@elisealexandra.com. And remember, we are rooting for you.